Welcome to the Finance and Governance Committee of Denver City Council. This meeting of the Finance and Governance Committee begins now.
Everyone, this is the Finance Governance meeting, and today is January 28th, 2025. Welcome, and if we could go around and do some introductions today, I will start with the lovely lady to my left.
Sarah Berdy, one of your council members at large. Amanda Sawyer, District 5.
Daryl Watson, Fine, District 9.
Good morning, Amanda Sandoval, Northwest Denver, District 1.
Good morning, Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez, your other council member at large.
Good morning, and I am Diana Romero Campbell, representing Southeast Denver District 4. We have a few items today, but a presentation by Councilwoman Sawyer and Councilman Watson. Before we get started, maybe we could just have our two other, I'd like to welcome our two other council members, if you want to do a quick introduction.
Hi, Chantel Lewis, District 8.
Good morning, Paul Cashman, South Denver District 6.
Lovely. We are just getting ready to go ahead and get started to talk about the Fair Election Fund. So I'm going to turn it over to you all to start the presentation.
Great. Well, thanks for chairing today. Appreciate you. Thank you all so much for being here. Before we get started, I wanted to just acknowledge that Clerk Lopez is not here today. Unfortunately, he had an out-of-town commitment, but I do want to say thank you to Andy and Nick for being here and for partnership in making some of the updates that we've made since the last time we were here in December. And hopefully you've all received the letter that was sent by the clerk's office last Friday. We have gotten to a place where I think we are all very, we're on the same page. We're all very excited about these changes. We think that they're gonna strengthen our entire campaign finance and elections division. And I wanna acknowledge both of our aides, Dwight and Matt. Thank you for all of your work on this. And I especially want to acknowledge Anshul and John, who have done an extraordinary amount of work in rewriting basically an entire section of the code. And so we just want to say first that how much we appreciate you and the entire team. Brylan, thank you for all of the work that you guys have done here. So this is the third time that we're back in committee, and I think we are we've finally gotten to a really great place with policy updates to our elections code and to the Fair Elections Fund. Anything I forgot before we get started?
No, I think we're good.
Okay, great. So just as a reminder, when, you know, after 2023, which was the first time that the Fair Elections Fund, which was voted on by the voters and approved by the voters of Denver, it was the first time that it was administered, and it was a huge lift for the clerk's office, who did an amazing job on that. But we do know that there were a few things that were flagged for us in candidate experiences and kind of some confusion, and so things that we wanted to really make sure that we could clear up. So with that, we are coming to you today with five proposed changes to our campaign finance ordinance and to the Fair Elections Fund. So these proposed changes are to first unify and simplify the election code. We'll go through each of these separately. Second, banning anonymous donations. Third, clarifying requirements for accessible and neutral debates. Fourth, updating requirements for neutral hearing officers during investigations. And then finally, a list of prohibited expenditures for Fair Elections Fund dollars. You want to take the first few, or you want me to?
Why don't you start the first few? I don't go for ban anonymous donations.
Okay. So the first thing we want to do is unify and simplify the elections code. So I don't know if any of you, when you were running for office, went and looked at our elections code to kind of figure out how to run for office, but it was incredibly confusing. And a lot of different really important pieces of information were in different places. So one of the things, and I think probably for me the single most important thing that we have done, is to clarify our entire elections code. To start with, this is how you become a candidate. This is how you raise money. This is how you become, you know, it's not just candidates, right? It's also independent expenditure committees and all of those different kinds of things. So so we really, and again, this was a huge lift for our city attorney's office, but we really tried to streamline and clarify and put into logical order This is how you become a candidate. This is how you raise money. This is how you report. This is how you no longer are a candidate or close your candidate account. You know, all of those different things into kind of logical, clear order so that future candidates for Denver's elections just have a very kind of clear understanding of all of the different steps that running for office takes, and so the ordinance is readable. Now, I want to acknowledge the clerk's office also has a number of resources that they offer to candidates, and they're very, very clear and very good. But I think that streamlining the ordinance in this way just adds to that. We want to make it easy for people to run for office. We want to lower as many barriers as we can to running for office, and this is one clear and concise way that we can do that. So that's the first one. You want to take the next one?
I'll jump in for Ben Anonymous donations. I think it seems to be intuitive that is something that candidates, community members, residents want. We felt that was important for us to elevate that opportunity. Anonymous contributions can hide donors' information and intentions. And that continues to erode trust that we have in government. How dollars are spent, who is giving funds. Undisclosed cash contributions obstruct the disclosure requirement necessary for transparent and fair elections. So we felt elevating, banning anonymous donations was essential, and that'll be a part of the ordinance.
And I do just want to add on this one thing I want to flag for you. So the current law says that you can do a cash donation of $50. Yeah. That remains. We're not changing anything about that. But what we want to make very clear is that if you're going to give $50 to a candidate, it's got to go in an envelope where you say what your name is, what your address is, who you work for, all of those different things like everyone else.
And many other municipalities have already done this, so we won't be a leader in this process. So neutral debates, I can jump into that as well. So the problem was for funding for the Fair Elections Funds was contingent on candidates participating in debates. We had lots of discussions about that. However, in 2023, some of the debates from candidate experience were not as neutral. They were not as accessible. And from the outcome, or for I could say as someone that ran in 2023, some of those debates just didn't feel fair. We wanted to make sure that we had a process across the board for all municipal candidates that these three things were met, that they were neutral, fair, and accessible to all. So the solutions was to, number one, we did a review of all city-owned buildings to make sure what was the level of accessibility. And we were a little bit shocked as to how few city buildings were fully or deemed ADA accessible, but we wanted to make sure that there was a clear requirement that all debates were held in spaces that were accessible. We wanted to establish the rules, the ideas around what makes for a fair, neutral debate and accessibility standards that can be done across the board. So it's not haphazard one debate is done where full accessibility and then the next one you go to doesn't have that. Or one debate is neutral and one is not. Only required for the process that we put in place is that the debates that we're having through FEF are only required if more than one FEF candidate is in a race. Is in a race with one debate required for the general election and one for the runoff election. That is something that's been a little consistent. City will contract with a third party who is not affiliated with or endorsed by a political party or candidate and will broadcast the debates. We'll require coordination with and notification to candidates of date, time, location at least 7 days in advance of the FEF debate. And once again, we're not going to be scheduling debates on Monday nights where if there are council members or others who are in committee meetings or in council meetings, they won't have to choose between going to an FEF debate in which they can lose FEF access to FEF funds or going to city council meetings. Require that the debate moderators, hosts, and questions be fair and neutral. And really want to make sure we have a space for community members to engage and to hear from the candidates that are running for office. I know we're going to have quite a few questions on that, and we can dig into that a little more deeper, as well as our partners from the Clerk and Recorder's Office.
You want me to take this one?
Please.
All right. So the current ordinance change that happened last spring gave the investigatory, it talks about investigatory authority of the clerk's office. And so what will happen is we wanted to make sure the clerk's office currently has and continues to have the ability to fine for things like filing violations, right, and things like that. But there's also this whole body around investigations when it comes to a complaint or something that looks like it might be a violation of our campaigns finance laws or the Fair Elections Fund. So the process that the clerk's office would like us to do, and so this is what's written into the bill, is that there will be administrative hearing officers that have the state judicial conduct standards attached to them. So if a complaint comes in from the public or the clerk's office in looking at disclosures and reporting finds an anomaly or a problem, that will be referred out to a hearing officer. And that hearing officer is required by language and ordinance to be neutral, to do an investigation, and then they can make a determination of whether there was actually a violation of our campaign finance law or not. If there is, then they have the ability to do a number of different things. Decertify an FEF candidate, fine a candidate, any of those different kinds of things. So what we wanted to make sure was that this process was clear to everyone, that it was fair to everyone, that it supports due process for all candidates, but also doesn't put the clerk's office in a position where they are making a determination. This is especially true if, say, for example, the complaint comes in about a potential clerk candidate.
Never.
Right? So we want to make sure that this is very fair, very neutral, very straightforward, but also clear to everyone. So this is going to be the process of investigations moving forward. So what the ordinance says is that, a third-party neutral hearing officer that has the investigatory capacity to look into that complaint, make a determination, and then, fine, decertify, et cetera. So that is now written in. It's very clear. It's very straightforward. But it also sort of ensures that there's no conflict of interest in the case of, someone running for against an incumbent clerk who might have a problem. So. I think that's pretty straightforward. I'm sure that there are going to be some questions about that. We can talk more about it, but let's move on to the next one. You want to do this one?
Yeah, I was going to say, and this is one we received most feedback from throughout the process. And we knew that this one, as we're looking at spending prohibitions for Fair Election Fund dollars, that this one has generated a lot of engagement. Most of our stakeholdering, most of our discussions with council members and others has been around this piece. You can see, I think we started off, there were two pages of this list. Based on your direct feedback from the Clerk and Recorder's Office, we've made substantial changes. And it's not even so much of a compromise, but really we learned from each of you and from the Clerk and Recorder's Office, and it's our hope and expectation that you see in this list a reflection of the input that you provided to us. As you can see on the slide, we segmented in red, and we used some holiday colors, currently prohibited by federal, state ordinance rules and regs, and green, some of the items that are banned by other municipalities. Each of these were spoken to with the Clerk and Recorder's Office, and they provided feedback working with our attorneys as well. So I'll talk through very quickly. There was kind of a lack of clarity, I can say from my perspective and others, and consistency on permissible uses of FEF funds. There's a risk with that lack of clarity of misuse undermining public trust in the fund. The solution was to prohibit spending FEF matching funds on certain items that could undermine that public trust. The bill now only includes the following items. The purchase of alcoholic beverages as term is defined in Chapter 6. The purchase of regulated marijuana as termed is defined in Colorado Marijuana Code. The purchase of tobacco products as that termed in defined in Chapter 24, gifts valued more than $50, payments of fees, fines, or penalties to the city, the purchase of any prepaid credit or gift cards of any kind. And we've had quite a bit of discussion, I think, in council this term around prepaid credit cards, reimbursing contributors for their contributions, to say that faster. Participating candidates shall reimburse the city for fund payments used to purchase personal or real property valued above a de minimis amount determined by the clerk. And we've had some briefings from council members. We have folks from our city attorney's office that can describe what de minimis, what they're speaking to, and why this is important. I don't know, council member, if you wanted to share anything else on this.
Yeah, so I will just say, want to be really clear about what already exists in rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, all of these you've seen before, everyone has sort of agreed that alcoholic beverages, marijuana, tobacco, you know, gifts more than $50, payments of fees, fines, et cetera, gift cards. We know the Department of Finance has a major problem with gift cards. And so it's really the bottom two that I want to kind of focus on, because I think those other ones are pretty straightforward and something we've kind of talked about at length at this point. So reimbursing contributors for their contributions. This one, the clerk and recorder's office actually said, you know, we'll support you on this one, but we sort of don't feel strongly either way about this. So acknowledging that. Councilmember Watson and I were very concerned about the potential for someone to, let's say you get to your one donation away from hitting the Fair Elections Fund. So you get your mom to give you $50, and then you get your $450 match, and then you give your mom her $50 back. And that is taking advantage of the system. Right. So we kept this one in for that specific instance. We wanted to make sure that it was clear to everyone that that is not OK, that is gaming the system, and that is not something that should be allowed under the Fair Elections Fund. So that's why that one is in there. The participating candidates shall reimburse the city for property. This one, we removed a number of our different recommendations that we had come to you a couple of times on as a result of this. This is a rule and reg that already exists within the clerk's office, and it existed in 2023. And so the rule says, you know, if you purchase property, you need to, with Fair Elections Fund dollars, you need to reimburse the Fair Elections Fund for that after you finish running for office. This is something like, let's say, and so here's the challenge. It's if you purchase a $5,000 computer, yep, using Fair Election Fund dollars, right, that is very different from purchasing pens. Pens do not have a resale value. If they've got your name on them, you know, nobody wants them anyway. Wow. So except maybe my mom. Yeah. So we want to make sure that those kinds of items do not have to be reimbursed. That's silly, right? But at the same time, a $5,000 computer that does have resale value, does have, you know, a value to it, is either reimbursed, it is sold, any of those different kinds of things. I think the clerk's office is happy to talk a little bit more about that. I'm sure that there will be questions about it, but want to be very clear, this is a rule that already exists and was enforced in 2023 during that election. We think it is important enough that we put it in this list of expenditures so that it is very clear to people what that looks like. And that it exists. So that's why it's in here. This is an addition. This is not one that you had seen before. But it also, I think, addresses a number of the other different things that we had made recommendations on in here. For example, automobile, you know, leases, purchases, et cetera, was one thing that we had on the list previously that is no longer on the list because it falls under this rule and reg. I'm looking at you guys to make sure that I'm explaining that correctly and you're happy with that explanation. Awesome. Okay. So that's just, I think, a simple example of what that looks like. It is something that already exists that has been in practice, that was in practice during the 2023 election, but it lived in rules and regs. And like I said, we feel strongly enough that it is a very important one, and so that it come out of rules and regs and go into the ordinance so that it is flagged for everyone who might be running for office. So I am certain that there will be lots of discussion around on that, but wanted to flag that for you all as we discuss this.
That was great. No, I thought that was great. That's great.
Good.
And we'll jump to the stakeholder process. We've had lots of discussions internally. We have a town hall planned for the 4th that's coming forward that you'll see on the next slide. So these are the folks that we've met with, the departments, the teams, and obviously each of you as city council members, we've briefed you on this.
And before we go on, I just want to acknowledge Owen Perkins in the audience. Owen, thanks for being here as well. Owen is one of the original drafters of the original Citizens Initiated Ordinance. And so thanks for being here today.
And I'll quickly hit the timeline, Matt. So we began in May. Well, actually, we began before May, but this is the first timestamp was the council member survey to receive your feedback. And our expectations for things that are upcoming, we're at FinGov today. If the committee decides to move this to the floor, we'll be moving to the floor. But on February 4th, we'll have a community town hall. We're going to walk through to community members what this, what we're proposing, why we're proposing it. It's going to be at a Glen Arm Rec Center at 2800 Glen Arm Street from 6 to 7 p.m. There'll be food, there'll be interpretation, and available time for folks to ask questions of any of us, and the clerk and recorder's office will be present as well. Mayor Council is going to be February 4th, February 10th, first reading, and as it moves through that process, the expectation is February 18th, second reading and required public hearing and vote.
That's it. Before we open it up to questions, clerk's office, do you guys have anything you want to add to what we said, or would you prefer to just answer questions?
Let's just wait till
the Perfect.
Thank you for that excellent summary.
There we go. Well, thank you again for the presentation and for the thoughtful engagement process that you've had. We have everybody in the queue.
All right.
So we are going to go ahead and get started on all of those questions, and we will start with Council President Sandoval.
Thank you. Thank you all for this. So at one point you came to us and were changing the amounts of the, is that gone?
Yep.
Okay. And I want to be clear, the amounts for FEF and non-FEF candidates for making parity on that, that was something that we thought was maybe from input from council members, from the clerk's office and our deliberations, that was going a step too far. We do not believe that the intent of the voters was to have FEF and non-FEF candidates having parity.
Great. So my one question is on one of the slides, I have the ordinance open, so I'm reading the ordinance on the slides. It says city will contract with third party who is not affiliated with or endorsed by a political party or candidate and will broadcast the debates. So my concern with having this in ordinance is just because we put out an RFP doesn't mean we solicit something. And I'll give you an example. We have safe parking, and it was a huge initiative that all of us on council actually really want. We put out RFP, we put out an RFP, we put out an RFP. No one responded. So what happens if this is an ordinance and no one responds? Because I can't think of one entity that would respond to this.
Yeah, so it's a great question. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about the MOU process?
Sure.
Okay.
Andy Sparis, Chief Deputy City Clerk. So we have been in discussions with a number of city agencies, Denver 8, Arts and Venues. It feels like a whirlwind of discussions about debates lately. And the plan will be to sign an MOU. I'm not sure if it will be held by us or Arts and Venues. We're still in discussion. But outlining an MOU that really what the contractor will be is more of an event planner than sort of an event organizer, per se. Not to offend all the event planners out there doing weddings and things, but really to coordinate with the candidates, coordinate with the venue, identify and solicit the hosts, so hosts or moderators who are going to write the questions, because the clerk's office doesn't want that authority. We don't want other agencies in the city to have that authority. So, you know, the question still will be who's going to hold that contract. So we just had a meeting on Friday, feels like Friday, with Arts and Venues and the mayor's office and Denver 8. And so we're trying to figure out who's going to sort of
manage that. But the MOU will be signed, and then it will be very clearly laid out sort of the steps and the timeline regarding the debates. But, you know, if we feel it, we don't want to assign a contractor per se. And if it does fall back to, you know, I don't know the law well enough or how the law works if we don't have a contractor and then it falls to us to sort of do what that does. But, you know, I think we'd be amenable to just saying a contractor or, you know, a city agency. But that's sort of more of a discussion for you all.
Okay, so what type of fiscal note does this have with it? Because sure. Now we're creating a contract sure. for a event organizer right. to find the host. I can't think of anyone who would want to do that. Why would anyone want to do that? Like, why would anyone want to, like, seriously go out for a bid to put themselves in the middle, to have to do ADA compliance, to work with the clerk's office, to have an agreement sure. with arts and venues, then to have to, like, go out to all of the candidates and then coordinate all of this for maybe pennies on the dollar? I just can't figure sure. out anyone who'd want to do that.
Yeah, so there's sort of two fiscal, you know, we don't know the cost of it fully yet. I think we're still waiting on some costing from Denver 8. There is some potential funds out of the Fair Elections Fund. You know, we would consider this a Fair Elections Fund priority. That being said, I don't think we could, you know, shoulder a huge burden out of the fund, being that we were within, you know, I think $35,000 or $40,000 of exhausting the fund last election. But, you know, I think what we could do is, you know, split the cost, and probably once we have a cost associated, come back to council of what the clerk's office could burden, or, you know, shoulder the burden of if it's Fair Elections Fund or directly clerk dollars, and, you know, coming back to you all. But it's sort of a what if, what does the city's fiscal financial situation look at? I know that was a concern of the mayor's office when we spoke with him on Friday. And so, to be transparent, I think it's going to be up to council to help us find the additional dollars that we'll need. But I don't think we feel like the Fair Election Fund shouldn't pay for part of this as well.
No, Andy, thank you for that. And I will just say, so there's a lot. There's a lot going on here. This is a heavy lift. But there's some legal issues here. As a city actor, we need to be very careful that we are not prescribing what questions are being asked at a candidate debate, right? So we have to have some way to ensure that the city is one step removed from these debates. These debates were voted on by the voters. They're something the voters want. They made clear of that in their votes. We've got to keep them. The question is how to make sure the city is not, as a government actor, is not putting ourselves at legal risk at First Amendment for questions, right? And so, yes, I hear you. This is a little bit complicated.
I have that down the list. I'm talking specifically. I'll get to that.
Yeah. Hey, so let me just.
I'm talking money.
Right. So let me finish with the dollars piece. Right. So, so given that framework that allows us to be one step removed as a city actor from this, that means that there are going to have to be dollars involved. We as council had a discussion about that. Discussed that this was something the voters had voted on. This is something that is important, and committed as a group that we will find those dollars depending on what that looks like. Now, there are a lot of ways that this could look, right? For example, TV8 could host this debate in their studios. If that's the case, the costing of that is significantly less than, say, we host it with a community partner at Auraria campus, right? Or something like that. So there are just, I think, a lot of variables that are just not clear. And there's also a difference between what you write into the ordinance and what happens operationally. And so what's written into the ordinance is the clear expectation that there be debates, that they be accessible, that they be televised, and that they be neutral. Operationally, what that looks like is something that's still being worked out. And I think that is something that it will come, the discussion of it and the different responsibilities for different agencies, et cetera, will come in the MOU.
So I'll just say I don't feel comfortable having this as you just didn't. Yeah, you didn't. It's so unclear. Okay. Like, I think the whole point is to be clear. And I just don't feel like having this in the ordinance I agree with like wanting to have a neutral moderator. I agree with, I feel like we're putting ourselves like in the middle of something that's going to get super sticky by having just even this comp, even having a me asking this question and going saying to the clerk's office that it's going to be an MOU in between agencies, and then we have a fiscal note to attach to it. I didn't realize that the ordinance would have a fiscal note. This is the first time I've heard that the ordinance would have to have a fiscal note attached to it, right? By having to go out for an RFP to have a third party moderator. That has money attached to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And currently, we don't have any money to find that. I don't know anyone in the city who would do that. And I don't know how we would pay for it. So I'm just concerned about the logistics of having that in the ordinance. I agree that we want to have required debates to be moderators, host, and neutral. And I understand the First Amendment, right? I understand all of that. I just don't understand, like, what I feel like we're going to do is we're going to pit arts and venues against Channel 8, which is technology services, against a third-party person who wants to really have, like, open debates, and it's going to be the third-party person who's going to have to go to arts and venues, who's going to have to go to the clerk's office, who's going to have to go to all of the candidates, and then go to Channel 8. And if Channel 8 says, no, I don't want to do it, then they're going to have to go the third-party venue. Third party, right? The one that, that would go out for RFP and solicit the info, would have to figure out how to do all of it. And so I feel like we're putting the onus on who, I don't know what entity is out there. When I got the briefing from your council, I started Googling afterwards and saying, what company exists like that in Denver? I couldn't find any. If you all know ones that do, that would want to take this on, I'd be fascinated to find that out and have this conversation before this portion goes further.
So my question, Council President, would be, are you asking for the part within the ordinance where we say the city will contract with a third party who's not, you're saying that that should not be an ordinance, because obviously we understand that the election's not for two more years. We knew within the MOU that we're going to have to do some drilling down and refinement of what that process looks like. It was not our intent to be able, before council, to be able to delineate exactly how we execute on that step. Are you saying removing of that piece would be something that would be amenable to you, and then we simply come back with all the research that we're currently doing with all of the different parties and have that maybe in rules and regs or something else?
It should be in rules and regs. I like that it says requires the debate monitors host questions be fair and neutral. I mean, I think that if the attorneys are good with that. But I just have this, I'll just say this. I always say that anytime the city gets involved, the government gets involved, it gets complicated. It just does. And yeah. So I always tell my residents, I'm trying to get the city out of being the governing, something like that, because it just gets, it's an RFP, then who's going to be hold it? Is it? We don't even know if it's going to be arts and venues or technology services right now.
Well, so we actually sort of, that part, we view, so the current ordinance that was voted on by the voters requires that the debates be broadcast. That language is no different than.
But it doesn't require a third party. A city will contract with the third party.
Right, that part. Affiliated. Yeah. That's right. So they're like, even if we took that language out now to get this through, that language still exists. It's in the current ordinance.
And that's fine, right? With that, but it doesn't say the city will contract with a third party who is not affiliated or endorsed by a political party or candidate and will broadcast. So leave the broadcast debates in there. Sure, it worked, fine. I mean, that could be even Zoom, technically broadcast, mm-hmm. whatever. I just don't agree with the city will contract with the third party who's not affiliated. So that's my first point.
Okay.
And then the second one, participating candidates shall reimburse the city for funds, for fund payments used to purchase personal or real property valued above a de minimis amount determined by the clerk and recorder. Can the clerk's office give us examples? So the only thing I could think about was sometimes when you're printing, you don't always want to go to like a major printer. You just want to buy, have your staff have a printer.
Sure.
So I know someone who bought a printer. Would they have to pay for that printer back?
So
how does that work?
You know, I think where we're sort of at is we realize the de minimis level that was set previously was $50, and the sheer number of calls we got afterwards of like, I bought a $51 table from Costco. Like, do I need to liquidate that? We're trying to avoid that, but really setting, did you say 250? Was that, $250 is our draft rule. Is anything under $250 would not have to liquidate, but anything over you would. Really, and that also goes of, we've seen really, I know if you've ever printed a banner, they're more than $250. I don't know anyone who would give you $250 with a banner with your face on it. Like, maybe some people will, but you know, it's really for things like computers, printers over, you know, a set dollar amount. You know, if you bought a really nice TV for your office, or, you know, bought a Winnebago with the money to drive around the city, you couldn't keep that. You know, we're not super concerned about pens, clipboards, you know, beat up office furniture. It's really more effort for us to manage them selling it for $30 and reimbursing $30. So our draft rule is $250, that we plan on bringing a draft rule once this passes.
So like a camera. So someone brought a camera for $150 to go around and have
that'd
be fine. But if it was like a
sports camera with zoom lenses and things, you know, that would have to be sold at market value and that money reimbursed.
Okay. Just want to say thank you for all of the work. I think I'm reading through the ordinance and it does read easier as I'm reading through, just like, yeah. So but I will just say that right now I cannot vote with, as long as it has this contract with the third party. And I want to support this. I just feel putting that in ordinance, like if I think about the generations who come after us, it puts the city in the middle. And maybe it's just fresh in my mind because I'm sitting on the Downtown Denver Development Authority, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking about how we're getting peak dollars out to spur growth and spur this. And so I keep pushing and saying, we can't have the city always involved in this stuff. And I just have to... Every time we have the city involved in things, I feel like it gets super messy. And I don't want us to set a small local business up for failure by having this in ordinance and having an MOU and then Channel 8. And it just, I could see like a whole bunch of debacle happening. And I know that we want to have, I believe in the debate. I want them to be fair and neutral. So it's just that one line.
That's great. Can I just ask a follow-up question then for clarity? Because there are sort of two paths we can go here. And what we heard from feedback from other council members in all of our discussions was the single biggest concern council members had was around debates and who was hosting them and who was scheduling them and when they were scheduled and how they were notified, candidates were notified or not notified, and all of those different things. There are only kind of two ways to manage this. One is for the city to get involved, which takes care of all of those issues. The other is for us to not do anything and have it be like it was in 2023. And that's what we heard from council members you didn't want. So I guess if you have any thoughts on like a middle ground there, I'd love to hear it. I don't know how we ensure all of those different things that we council members said you wanted, like neutrality and fairness and notification and all the things, without getting involved.
I don't think that a third party contract gets me to where I do see neutrality. I could have a third party contract with someone who has a conflict of interest with me. So I don't agree that this captures my issues with what I experienced. I would rather have nothing. Just keep it the way it is and maybe come look back at it and maybe keep working on it.
Okay.
And have in ordinance the city will contract with a third party who's not affiliated. I just don't feel like it's gonna, I don't know, my spidey senses are telling me that something's wrong with that.
Okay.
And whenever I don't listen to my spidey senses, it comes back to haunt me and I'm like, I should have spoken up and I should have said something. So I'm just
no, that's great.
I just have to say
around.
It. Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We're going to go to Councilman Cashman and then Parity's on deck.
Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I mean, what a ridiculous lift this is. And thanks to the clerk, thanks to Owen and the original writers, so important. I think Council President brought up a great point. You know, it's like, okay, how does this actually affect? And my question's around the debate as well. It requires a debate if you have at least two candidates participating in the Fair Election Fund. So you've got, for sake of argument, you got three people in the general election, two are in the Fair Election Fund, one is not. You have a debate. The one who is not and one of the ones who is are now in the general election. So you only have one candidate in the Fair Election Fund in the general. Would that trigger an election or a debate?
Yeah, under this language, the answer to that is no.
Yeah.
And here's why. The original language, the way it was written, I think it's more for one person who is not taking the Fair Elections Fund dollars and one person who is. The one person who is under the current language is required to have a debate because they are taking Fair Elections Fund dollars. But the one person who isn't taking Fair Elections Fund dollars isn't.
Yeah.
Right? So what that sets up is a situation where either the person who is not taking Fair Elections Fund dollars is required to debate, even though we can't legally require them to debate, or the person who is taking Fair Election Fund dollars gets an hour to stand up there and speak without the other person they're running against being there.
Yeah.
That's the problem that we're trying to solve here.
Yeah.
Frankly, if you're running for office, you should be willing to get up there and debate.
Right.
But legally speaking, can we require them to do it?
Yeah, that's
no.
That's kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
Because if I'm a Fair Election Fund candidate, let's say going up against a non-Fair Election Fund candidate who's an incumbent, I want that debate because I need everything, every opportunity I have. So I'm just saying the whole debate thing feels weird. And like you say, I don't know. I guess there's got to be a way in election law that you can require debates, but I don't know how that would play out. Just feels odd to me.
Anshul, do you want to talk through that piece a little bit? It's a great question, and it's definitely something we kicked around because it happened to me.
Thanks for the question, Councilman Cashman. I'm Chicago Assistant City Attorney. I don't know the answer to the question of can we require debates for candidates for any given office, even if they are not accepting Fair Election Fund money. I don't know the answer to that. What I do know the answer to is that if we are giving candidates city money, Fair Election Fund money, then we can require reasonable restrictions on the spending of that money, and we can require reasonable requirements for running as a candidate. I don't know the answer to that question if they're not accepting FEA funds.
And you can try to find out.
I can find out for you if you'd like, yeah.
I figured you could. Thank you. Thank you, my friend. And the last thing, you weren't suggesting that Councilman's mother was the one that was going to do that shady years 50. She sounds like a wonderful woman.
Oh, my mother would never do that.
If she's watching right now, I apologize if I in any way, shape, or form suggested that because I don't think that you're amazing, and so is your son.
That's all. Thank you.
Nice catch.
Thank you, Council Member Parity, and then Gonzalez Gutierrez on deck.
Great. Thank you. It's funny to be legislating something that like every single person at the table has like deeply been through. So good job, guys. I had a few questions that I flagged when Councilmember Watson and his team briefed me yesterday, and I'll just flag them again here. So same questions I had yesterday. First one, and I think they're both on the slide that has to do with the prohibited expenditures. Thank you. That color coding saved my entire life when I saw it. So one quick question would be, understanding and agreeing with the the solution about trying to not worry about really small items, like reimbursing those, but worry about the big items. I just had a quick question of whether the term de minimis is the right term, because I would be worried that even something like $250 might be a little high to count as de minimis. So that's like a total nitpick of like whether the words de minimis get us where we want to be.
That is a question for the city attorney's office.
And I don't even care if you guys answer it here. Okay. I just wonder if it could be like a, you know, a modest amount, some other, I worry if that term of art is too restrictive. That's all.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm guessing there's probably like case law in the world.
Anshul,
if you know,
that's a legal question for the city attorneys or you guys. So yeah.
Thanks, Councilman Parody, Anshul Bhag, Assistant City Attorney. Good question. De minimis can be contextual. I think that there aren't really a lot of guardrails placed by the term de minimis, so the clerk and recorder's office could go up to a particular amount. However, if the particular amount was contextually irrational, then I think that they would be, the de minimis would actually place guardrails on that. Nick is standing up. He probably has a better answer than I do.
Well, I was just going to say...
Nick, will you introduce yourself?
Nick Mann, Campaign Finance Administrator. Thank you. It's good to be here. Our concern is really resale value, not even de minimis value. So I think that, I don't know exactly how to put this in the ordinance or rule or whatever, but really the goal is, if it is an item that has a substantial resale value, you should not keep that property. If it doesn't have resale value because it's a used pen, it's got your face on it, something like that, that's not something our office cares about. It's really real physical property with a resale value that would have a personal value to the person going forward. And however we accomplish that, we're happy to do that, but that's what we're trying to go with the language.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. So I'm not gonna like die on this hill, but I just could see de minimis being like someone challenging the idea that that if we set $250, that that's like more than de minimis and therefore out of compliance with the ordinance. And so maybe a term like material or something like that, I'll leave that to everyone and all the lawyers. Conceptually, I think it's
I'm gonna leave that to Anshul.
And then the other question that I had in briefing was, so on this issue of refunded amounts, I think there's, again, like a lot of ways that this could play out for people. And I, again, deeply agree with the underlying concern. And so I said this to Councilmember Watson, like one thing that I experienced was someone asking for a return of their donation after it had been matched. And so I returned it not from FEF funds. I returned it from, you know, other donations, and then was saying to the clerk's office, like, this was matched. Do you need to take away my match? Can I provide another donation? And my memory is that the clerk's office didn't really have a process for that at the time. And so I would have felt much better if we did have a process. I was like trying to give back the match, and I had received lots of other donor donations that could have been matched in their place. Whatever.
Yeah, Nick, I think we talked
quickly,
through that.
Well, let me just quickly say, I think now that I'm hearing what the underlying concern is, what I would say is that what's really needed is a process whereby, whether it's during the period where you're trying to get the 100 donations and hit the match, or whether you've qualified and you're then matching individual donations, I think the process should be, if a donor asks for their $50 back, that you basically have to, there should be a way to provide like a substitute donation. Like if you hit the 100, you qualified, and then someone asks for the donation back. I mean, that can happen, and donors can do that without it being like a, you know, sketchy arrangement with the candidate, you know what I mean? And so I think maybe the clerk's office could like, I don't know what to do about distinguishing between those two things, but it seems like there should be a way to like just replace it with another Denver donation. But then also, I don't know how we then get at that gamesmanship. So, and I agree it shouldn't be reimbursed out of FEF contributions, but reimbursements can legitimately be requested, and you need to be able to do that and then deal with the FEF implications of having done that. So I think there's a slightly different set of concerns than what the current language is hitting, including the concern that you guys identified.
Do you want to respond to that?
So I think everybody's in agreement that no refund should be issued from the FEF account. That's what this language does. Yeah. There's a separate issue that has been identified, which is, can you reimburse from your donor funds account? That is not contemplated in this law. That is still that is a tricky situation, because there are, as you say, legitimate, you know, somebody changes their mind, a new candidate gets in the race, you take a policy position that the donor disagrees with and asks for a refund. We want to be cognizant of that issue. We also don't want somebody to game the system. There's some sort of ambiguity right now in the law with that. Our guidance was that we were skeptical of those, but there was not a prohibition. We discussed putting in a prohibition on refunding any donation that's been matched. The drafter said that might be a little bit too confusing for this bill. So we said, okay, let's keep this narrow language. We can establish a process in guidance for how to do that. The real concern, right, is somebody saying, I'm going to refund all my donations once I get matched. That is illegal under the letter of the law. You have to say on all your forms that you will not be reimbursed or and you're giving without coercion. But we want to be cognizant of those one-off situations and not over-regulate, but happy to talk through a process in our guidance for those one-off situations.
Okay. And I will say, just to build off of what Nick said, I think that is also why we have put this investigation, third-party investigation opportunity in place, right? This is one of those things where the clerk's office, in seeing this, could kick it to a hearing officer who could do an investigation and then make a determination of, oh, this is just a one-off thing, or this is a problem and a violation of our campaign finance language. So I think that is that kind of example shows the strength of the investigatory authority and the value of the investigation by a third party neutral hearing officer, which is why we have put that process in place. So there is a backstop there. So it's not just simply the clerk's office saying yes or no, or having to do an investigation themselves, which they frankly do not have the bandwidth to do when they're running, a huge municipal election. So remember that there's also that investigatory piece in place through a neutral hearing officer that would allow for some flexibility there and some fact finding there, because something like that is so very fact specific.
Yeah, and I think to your point, I think the idea just that you can't reimburse a donation out of your FEF funds, I'm comfortable with that being an ordinance. Yeah. And the rest of it, the other kind of assorted issues that have to do with reimbursing out of non-FEF and when you can do that and what happens to the match, not being addressed, because this is about what you can use FEF funds for. So I think I'm satisfied on that one, but I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah,
and thank you, Nick. Yeah, I think I'm good with those two questions. I have some questions and thoughts about the debates as well, but I think I want to ruminate on those. I think it's more comments than questions, and I want to think it through a little bit more. So thank you guys so much for the work. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All right, Councilmember Gonzalez Gutierrez, and then Councilmember Lewis on deck.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for all the work. I know that I think we're still trying to get a briefing scheduled for my office, so it's I think it's just been a little hit or miss with our scheduling. And I hope that will be happening soon. But with that said, I did have a question about the hearing officers. Mm-hmm. I wasn't clear on how are those going to be funded and who will be these neutral hearing officers if they're not coming from the clerk's office?
Yeah, they already exist.
Okay.
So this process already exists. Do you want to talk
a little bit? Yeah, so the hearing officers, we do employ two non-office hearing officers that have expertise in the field. That is a challenge to find someone that understands. I'm sorry, Andy Sakaris, campaign finance, or not campaign finance administrator anymore, chief deputy city clerk. We do employ two contract out to two hearing officers that are former judges that have experience in campaign finance law. So it isn't like the same arbiters that are arbiting parking tickets. That is paid for out of our office budget. So we pay for those out of our office budget.
That is helpful. As far as I know, we were like getting in the weeds of the language being utilized to determine which of those things that would need to be reimbursed for, and it did say like these things would be, it sounds like, detailed in the rules and regs. I guess with that said, it sounds like there's a lot of discretion of the clerk's office to determine or to like provide a list of those things to candidates, or will it just be based on the language, like de minimis and amounts or whatever is going to end up?
I'll let you jump in because he's been working on the rules more than I have, so okay. I don't want to misstate.
And this question is specific to the reimbursement rule.
Any
real property, so if it is a physical thing you can hold in your hand, it would apply to this. If there's a resale value of the physical thing, it would apply. That is a good thing because it allows it to be sort of encompassing. Really, we applied this rule, I believe, four times last cycle for one printer and three laptops. That was it. I would anticipate a similar situation going forward. But the language is intentionally expansive. As part of the discussion of narrowing the list of prohibited expenditures, you know, we want to provide flexibility. If you really want to buy a $500 office chair to make fundraising calls in, and you think it's an important part of your campaign, that is an acceptable use of your funds, but you can't keep the chair. So, you know, we don't want to specify every single instance that this could apply. It is really if there's an item of value that you can hold in your hands that has a resale value that you paid for with FEF funds, you can't keep it.
Okay. And does this only applies to the fair election funds?
Correct.
Not yeah. the other, okay.
So yeah, so what most folks did, the one candidate with the printer I know just said, okay, I'm just going to reimburse for the full value of the printer out of my donor funds account, okay. and we let the campaign keep the printer. So, you know, if it is a nice TV you want for your campaign office and you want to keep for your reelection,
great.
Absolutely pay for it out of donor funds. This won't be an issue. It won't even get flagged. Or if you pay for it out of FEF funds, you'll have the option reimburse with donor funds or sell the item and reimburse the fund for the funds.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And I was going to say, Nick and Andy also, they have a candidate education process as well. So it won't only be in rules and reg where folks have to figure out where that's at. They will have a robust candidate education step. So they'll talk through some of these things that are very broad, but they'll provide examples like what Nick just did.
We've committed to expanding that guidance based on the feedback from the sponsors and sharing it with them before it's published and trying to be a little bit more... a detail there as opposed to in the ordinance itself.
And I will say some of the feedback we heard from you all in December was that we were too specific,
yeah.
right? And so in saying de minimis as opposed to saying over $50, we tried to add back in that flexibility that we heard concerns from you all about in December, but that makes it a little wishy-washy, right? And it just is what it is. But I think the ability to kind of do the training and have that set in rules and regs, however it works for the clerk's office, is the best of both worlds on this one.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the flexibility. I just wanted to hear from what their interpretation or how they would operationalize it. But thank you for listening to some of the concerns that were raised throughout the whole process. I really appreciate it. And I look forward to my one-on-one. Thank you.
Thank you, Manager. Yeah, go ahead.
Just one item of context. I think it's important for the public to know that this is a tiny, tiny sliver of all the FEF dollars. It's a little bit hard because different people categorize expenditure slightly differently, but upwards of 90% of all FEF funds were spent on mail, digital ads, television ads, campaign staff, and signs. That 90% would never be covered under this. So it's really the 10% of, the less than that, because even that includes, polling and legal fees and things. But really 90% of all the FEF funds were spent on either direct voter communication or campaign staff. And so really we're talking about a very sliver of the random items you buy for the office. How do they fall into it? And I don't want to lose the forest through the trees that 90%. The auditing is very easy. It's a TV ad. It's a mailer. We're all good. There's no additional follow-up. It's really just that those remaining items.
Thank you.
All right, Councilwoman Lewis.
Okay, let's see.
Your turn.
Thank you. I have a few questions for you all. And Councilman Watson knows about some of these questions because yeah. I asked them in during my briefing with you all. But I will start with Council President's concerns about the debates because I thought those were really good questions, and then it made me think how do you all determine a conflict of interest procedurally?
Anshul, do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Thanks, Councilman Lewis, Anshul Paga, Assistant City Attorney. The conflict of interest would be determined under the ethics code if we're talking about a city officer, because the ordinance as drafted requires the contractor to hold the debates. I suppose that the dispositive point of inquiry would be when the city is going to contract for the organizer. We'd have to look at whether there were conflicts of interest under the ethics code. But outside of that, there's not an additional thing that we would do to regulate the contractor outside of the contract and the MOU potentially.
Okay. And I will say our ethics code is very clear. It's financial. It is a family member, of which there are very specific ones. Our ethics code is very clear on what is a conflict of interest is.
Okay, that's helpful. I feel like I have a follow-up, but I'm going to go to the questions that I jotted down. So is there any method to cure if the neutral debate requirements are not met?
It's a good question.
Yeah,
that's not something we've really talked about or thought about.
No, that would be up to the contract. because the ordinance itself doesn't require anything. So if we, when we add in the neutrality requirement, if you wanted to add that into the ordinance, it's not in the draft that's uploaded to Legistar right now. If we add in the neutrality requirement in the ordinance, I still think that the contract is your primary source of remedy for lack of neutrality, because all of this is carried out by a contract under the language that's currently written.
When you use contract, you're saying in response to the RFP?
Correct. So currently the ordinance requires that the debate be held pursuant to an agreement between the city and another organization. If the organization does not live up to the neutrality requirements that are in, either in the contract or the ordinance, largely the remedy would be via the contract. So, termination of the contract, et cetera. There are a number of different hypotheticals I can walk down if we draft different language, but I won't do that.
And I will say that sort of gets to the heart of why the language in the first place, the city will contract, right? Because, and this is sort of what I was talking about earlier, there's two paths forward. We can either do, keep it how it is right now, in which case there is no remedy. There is nothing we can do if someone is not neutral, if someone is not collaborative, if someone does not let, if someone schedules a council, a debate during a council meeting, you know, any of those kinds of things. There's no remedy for that right now. The only way to put a remedy in place is to have a contract and then have a remedy via breach of contract.
Okay, so then I have another follow-up. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I have another follow-up. I know you all don't know the amount of money particularly that this might cost or what the RFP might say. Do you have a range? Because then it makes me wonder who would qualify, like who would be in the qualifying pool of candidates that could respond to.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of event planning firms within the city and county of Denver. There are any number of potential, organizations that exist within our city who might be interested in taking on something like this. Are they? I don't know. It depends on what the RFP says. It depends on what the dollar amount is, et cetera. The clerk's office and arts and venues and tech services have all, and the mayor's office have all been having a conversation about that. I don't know. Did you guys get the number estimates from tech services yet on what the broadcast piece of the cost would be?
I haven't gotten a firm number, but talking with technical services, it sort of depends on if we're doing them in the community. Sorry, Andy Sakaris. Again, I'm failing today. I'm really pretty good at this. Andy Sakaris, chief deputy city clerk. It sort of depends on a couple variables. So to start, our office spent no money on the debates last time. So we're starting from a place of like, what were your costs? I'm like, me pulling my hair out and our engagement staff running around trying to find sponsors. And so that was sort of the baseline. Talking to tech services, the range was if we do them at Denver 8, it's just staffing costs. So it's, $50,000 to $60,000 to $70,000. If we're going out and trying to do a debate and bring and broadcast on Denver 8 in every council district, it was in like the $300,000-$400,000 range. And that is not including a coordinator. I don't know what a coordinator costs, but I've heard, people to say, oh, that's probably a $30,000 contract or that's a $50,000 contract. I have no basis of that, what that is, but it could be us partnering with League of Women Voters or, an RNO or, heck, the Post. I don't know what that would look like. So there are a lot of what if variables on it. That being said, for us to, there's sort of the discount version to the Cadillac version. We have to sort of figure out where we land. Talking arts and venues, they can give us good deals on spaces, things like that. But it really will be, do we want to do them in each individual council district? Do we want to do them all in one day? So we start at 9 a.m. and go till 10 at night. And, it's sort of a number of different options that we're playing with to hit the rules of the law and also make sure it's a good debate for the public and you all, because there were some missteps on Monday nights on council, exactly at council time. But mind you, we did it with, zero staffing. This law is predominantly written after New York and they only do the citywide and they have two full-time 365 staff that just plan and manage these debate processes.
Thank you, that's super helpful. So that makes sense. I guess the concern that's coming up for me is less on the event planning piece, and if someone responds to the RFP, then they would be responsible for the creation of the questions that would be happening during the debates, or would it be a different party?
They would be, at least how I envision it, is the contractor would be sort of pulling all the pieces together, and then they would be doing the application process out to the moderators. The moderators would apply. They would vet the moderators. Yeah, you know, so they could go and put out a, you know, moderate the debate, and it could be a news organization, or it could be, you know, League of Women Voters, or, you know, but setting sort of the parameters is, there was a neutrality agreement in the original application process, and, you know, I apologize that people didn't feel it was always followed, but I want to be very clear of, there's a lot of interpretations of neutrality, and so, you know, I want to put that, be very clear of there are 13 of you all, and you all may be in the same debate and be like, this, you know, but that being said, I thought, you know, working with a neutral party that's not affiliated with a political party or an organization that has endorsed candidates, you know, being clear if the moderator has donated to a said candidate that they're moderating the debate, things like that.
And that doesn't, and Councilwoman Lewis was saying, and that doesn't, would not remove from the underlying rules process to have like HRCP or someone else. It's parties that we know that have not only clarity on how to, that actually do the work of making sure that equity is involved in process. So none of that's delineated in the law, but who helps with questions, who helps to vet those things are things that we will still have to develop, not we, but the clerk's office will have to still develop, and that will not be sliced out within the ordinance. But I'm sorry, I just thought I would add that it could be parties that we already trust that does equity evaluation of whether the types of questions that are asked do have some level of checks and balances on them. But anyway.
That's helpful. But if we move this out of committee and move it to council, would you all come back with that level of specificity, or would it be out of our hands at that point?
It would fall to the MOU process, which we would welcome you all to be part of, but, you know, it would most likely fall to the clerk's office to develop the MOU with, you know, TVAs and arts and venues and the mayor's office and just sort of all the different moving pieces. But it would become the MOU that the clerk's office would put forth.
Okay, and then with that sub piece that you mentioned, would that be held to the same conflict of interest standards or no, because it wouldn't necessarily be our process anymore because they would have responded to the RFPs and now they're subbing that out.
I think we would set that in the RFP process of, you know, we would approve the application, the sort of guardrails or the guidelines to apply for being a moderator or a question writer, however we want to define it. But it would be sort of, we would set those parameters for, you know, really we need just someone to coordinate it versus, you know, like, make sure you all are notified on time and not 3 days before, and things like that. But then also said they wouldn't just have sort of free rein to do whatever they wanted and sort of just be like, we're going to do this and it's going to be a pickleball tournament, you know, or like whatever it will be. You know, we would set the parameters for them to run it.
Okay.
So you just won Yahtzee because you said pickleball.
Yahtzee.
So, and I would say, I mean, we do respect the opinion of council on specifically the point on city will contract. If this moves out of committee before first reading, we will definitely be looking at whether that is something that remains or not. And so we've been very responsive to pretty much every point you all have made. And so this will be the one that's as an outlier that we will be in close discussion before it comes to first reading.
Okay, that's helpful. You all mentioned, and I can't actually remember what the topic was, that you couldn't apply, I think it was Cashman's question, you couldn't apply restrictions to non-FEA, FEF candidates. Is that is that why we are not applying the restrictions when it comes to FEF candidates, non-FEA? Thanks, go.
Yes, I'm so glad you asked that question because you're right, this is something we didn't talk about. And I have to say thank you to the clerk's office for explaining this to me in a way that I actually understood. So now I'm gonna explain it to you in a way that you actually can, like, will make sense.
Hopefully.
So there were a number of things that we put in the FEF expenditure restrictions list that we removed. And I'm gonna give you a really clear example, mortgage. So the clerk's office, there is a body of law, and the clerk's office uses this body of law. And so the general overarching rule is, as long as something is rationally related, reasonably related to the administration of a campaign, it is an acceptable campaign finance expenditure. That is for non-FEF dollars and for FEF dollars. Mm-hmm. The clerk's office and everybody else uses a legal test. They call it the but-for test. So here's what the but-for test looks like. I'm so glad you asked this question. But for the fact that you're running for office, would you have spent this money? So, a mortgage. You already own your house. You didn't buy a house because you are running for office. So it does not pass the but-for test because you have that legal obligation, that financial obligation. It was not incurred but for the fact you're running for office. Right? So a mortgage is something that would not be covered no matter if it was non-FEF dollars or FEF dollars. You can't pay your mortgage with campaign finance dollars. Did I explain that right? Yes. So a lot of the restrictions that we removed specifically because of that but-for test. If you have a car payment and you are using your car to drive around to a number of different things while you're running for a campaign, it doesn't pass the but-for test. So you couldn't use non-FEF dollars or FEF dollars to pay for your car payment with just because you're running for office.
So the restrictions apply to both.
They apply to both. And it's that but-for test. Yeah. So that's why we removed a number of those, because they do actually apply to both through this but-for test. Uh-huh. And so we didn't feel like then we needed to leave them in the list of restricted expenditures for FEF because they apply to both.
I see. Thank you.
So we can't regulate that as a city because there's a First Amendment issue with the donor, but the courts regulate that as a body of law. Did I explain that right? Yes? Okay. Took me a very long time to wrap my mind around that, but hopefully that made sense to you.
It did.
Okay.
I brought this up for Councilman Watson. There was only the option to sell the merchandise there were two options. You could sell it and repay it, or you could actually purchase it yourself. Is there an option to just give it back to the city and put it in our little storage unit that exists?
we discussed working with the lost and found property unit, and they were like, absolutely not. They were like, please, absolutely not. So really you can use non-FEF dollars to purchase it, or you can sell it and then return what you get for it. So if you take it to a pawn shop or sell it on eBay or whatever it may be. That being said, no, the city was a hard no on returning items to the city. Both our office is a hard no because I don't really want used campaign laptops and things to worry about, but the unclaimed property unit was a firm no on that process.
And then my final question for your office and also for Owen, does this address the intent for which the original language was drafted? And then for you all, does this work for your office in terms of being able to move this forward? Are there concerns or additions that you all might have?
The only sort of concern we have is the debate piece of just because there's a lot of unknowns with the MOU.
Okay. Okay.
That being said, our office is happy where the bill's at and I think is reflected in the clerk's letter, but I will.
Thank you. And then Owen.
Owen.
That's all right. Council Member Sawyer mentioned that you were one of the original drafters of this language, and I was curious with these changes, are they in alignment with the intent? Are there questions or open questions that you might have or concerns or changes? Or are you excited?
I think there's a little bit of straying from the intent, and I think the most important place that we're straying right now is with the restrictions. I think they're a lot better than they had been, much smaller list, much narrower list. But the decision to restrict funds for fair elections candidates to specify the restrictions for fair elections candidates and not to specify that those are restricted for all candidates, seems like treating candidates differently and treating their funds differently. And, you know, that we're trying to get them funds that they can use the same way that any candidate can use them, and that these campaign funds all follow the same rules of what is acceptable campaign expenditures. To specify, you know, in some case, and I there were things that we said today that along the lines of, you know, you can't do that with these funds. We don't think that's right. We think there's a problem with spending money this way. But if you use this loophole and use your donor funds, go for it. You know, there's nothing to stop you from doing that. If we think something is not a legitimate expenditure, it should be an expenditure restriction across the board. I have no problem with any of the restrictions that are being offered. It's just that distinction of saying, we're going to apply them with specificity in this case and leave it general in that case, and coming up with something that is treating candidates less equally. The reason we've heard in past meetings, and I don't know if there's additional reasons that have come to light, but has been that it's much harder to apply that across the board, to have all candidates subject to that specificity, that to enact that in ordinance would be much harder than to simply require it for FEF candidates. I don't understand, in a ordinance that is meant to promote equity and promote inclusion and promote, you know, uplifting everybody to the same level, why, I lost my train of thought there, but why we are, I lost it.
Okay, can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
In 1 minute or less, what would you recommend?
I think if, you know, and to finish my thought, it was, you know, why are we giving up on equity because it's hard? And saying that it's harder to do that. Okay, it's harder. Let's do the harder work and let's make it equitable. So my recommendation would be, if this is something we care about and we feel like these need to be specified, people need to know that this kind of expenditure is not okay. Just saying appropriate use of campaign funds to get elected, if that's not enough and you need to specify and say you can't spend it on a mortgage, I know we're not saying that anymore, or whatever, say it across the board. If that's a little harder, work a little harder and get it done across the board. Treat everybody equally. Get the restrictions uniform. Get the candidates treated equally, the candidate funds treated equally. What voters wanted was for candidates to get campaign funds from the Fair Elections Fund and to use those as campaign funds the same way any other candidate would. So that would be my suggestion there.
Thank you. Appreciate it. That's it. You can respond if you need.
No, I mean, I think, you know, we've been very clear that the original sponsors of the bill feel very strongly that there should be no restrictions around FEF spending of FEF dollars at all. And that is totally fair. We disagree. And in fact, those restrictions already exist within the clerk's office rules and regs and were and existed in 2023.
I was going to say, no, it sounded like, and correct me if I'm wrong, Owen, that they are okay with the restrictions as long as the restrictions apply to FEF candidates and non-FEF candidates.
Yeah, we don't have any problem. Yeah, there's never been a restriction on there that I've ever had any problem with. Have no problem applying it to FEF candidates as long as it's applied to everybody. And there's no reason, there isn't any good reason, really, why we should have two systems of campaign finance. I mean, campaign funds should all be following the same guidelines of what's an acceptable expenditure. And we have no problem accepting everything that's ever been on that list. It's got to go across the board. And we were told that's a lot harder lift to go across.
My hope, Councilwoman Lewis and Owen, maybe we have Anshul kind of describe what our role is as far as the ordinance specific to city dollars. So, and can you share, because it's not just simply because it's harder, but Anshul, if you don't mind providing some clarity on that, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Sure. So the amount of clarity I can provide is sort of similar to what I said previously on this topic before, which is the restrictions that we place on use of city funds that are given to somebody are different than the allowable restrictions we can put on private money. So if for the property reimbursement rule is a good example. So the city would have a hard time, I think, legally prohibiting someone from using private donor funds to purchase any property and then requiring those people to either reimburse the contributor or reimburse the city for property bought with private money. But with FEF funds, because they're funded by taxpayer dollars, we have a little bit more leeway to restrict how the funds are used. Whether you would like to apply the restrictions for FEF funds on private funds is a policy choice. Legally, we have a little bit more leeway with FEF funds, restricting use of FEF funds.
That would also be true for FEF candidates with the dollars that they receive privately versus the dollars that are matched by the city.
Correct. So the draft only restricts the use of the FEF payments specifically, not FEF candidates' expenditures of private money.
Very helpful.
And part of that goes to the separate accounts that we each had to set up as well. I mean, there's a clear delineation of tax dollars and personal dollars existing currently within the code that we all ran on as well.
Thank you. Great presentation. Appreciate your time.
Okay. Thank you for the questions. So some of my questions have been answered. I just wanted to, we have another person back in the queue, Councilwoman Gonzalez Gutierrez. Do you want to go ahead and go and then?
No.
And I was just going to.
I
was just going to say, because yeah, we did start late, we do have the ability to run a little bit over. And I know that we have, originally we were supposed to end at 12, but we've heard from Channel 8 that we can go over. So please continue and ask.
Did you have questions,
Manager? Some of my questions, more just statement, and I can follow up after your question.
Okay, just two quick questions. One is maybe not so much a question, but just like wanting to, I guess, at least be informed of like what are those rules and regs around how questions are determined for the debates. I know I've stated before that there have been some interesting ways that questions were formed, and it was like one person making a decision about all the questions. And so I don't know that we're going to solve that today, and knowing that it may go beyond like our code of ethics, it's not going to be captured in that. And so just wanting to have some assurance from the clerk's office that there is going to be, I just don't know what the parameters will be around questions.
Right now.
And Nick, before you answer, I just want to make sure for council members, I think there's going to be a motion to move this to the floor. I just want to make sure we still have quorum.
There is. I just did a count.
Hallelujah.
In the existing law as passed by the voters, the applicant who's going to host has to provide some information about how questions will be determined and how they'll be asked. Clearly, that was not sufficient, but that's the current process. The current draft gets rid of that application process in lieu of the subcontracting. I think that revisiting that application process might be an appropriate path forward based on this feedback, but there is some language in there that we can look to and improve on.
And maybe not just the application process, but then it's like the actual execution of that, because I think somebody could sit there and say, we're going to ask questions from community, or we're gonna put this out and try to get questions from the community. And then in the end, if they don't get those responses from community, then they're the ones creating all the questions.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, problematic. And then the second piece is wanting to make sure that there's a way that independent expenditures are not a host of a debate. And do you have ways to prevent that from happening?
That's a really good question. Right now, and we would want to keep it going forward, you cannot be a donor to a candidate. Independent expenditures are not donors. So I do not think it would be a problem to say, I mean, really, if you are electorally engaged prior to the debate, you shouldn't host. And however we do that, and I think clarifying the language to say, not only can you have not given a direct contribution, you cannot have made an independent expenditure during the election cycle or something like that would be perfectly reasonable to put either an ordinance in the rule, in the application, in the contract, whatever. But I think that's an appropriate idea.
And we will ask for that to be in the rules. So that's a direct ask. So that's not a maybe. That will be clearly identified in the rules.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And thank you for putting so much work into it. I appreciate the update during the briefing and going through the conversation, or but for, I said it wrong.
Trust me, I appreciate
all of the things. All of the things. We've been through a lot of scenarios.
And, I get it now. Yeah.
But just appreciate that. I think for the public also to realize that this is beyond, this is for all FEF funded campaigns. So not just city council, but also correct, the mayoral and, you know, clerk and recorder, auditor, et cetera. Auditor? Yeah.
Yes.
As well. Because we've had a sample of a couple dozen people who've been through this. So I just appreciate hearing all of that feedback. I have a question. We need to give a thumbs up to go to the floor, but I've also heard a lot of discussion around some of the pieces, and Council President Sandoval, I think some of the things that you brought up. Are you comfortable moving that, or do we want to bring it back to FinGov?
I'm comfortable moving it out because I could follow up with the sponsors about the, the language. It's I think half of the sentence works and half of it doesn't for me.
Perfect.
And we will do a presentation on the floor because there's a required public hearing with a staff report on the 18th. So, you know, happy to, if there are any minor tweaks like that that we need to make, we're happy to do that.
Perfect. I just appreciate the robust conversation, the great questions. We have to, are we good with a thumbs up to move this to the
floor? I formally move.
We need to move it?
Yeah, I move to approve filing of
2416.
This bill number.
241676.
to the full council.
Okay, and a second. Okay, so Sawyer, Councilwoman Sawyer, Council President Sandoval, second. Can we just do a thumbs up or where we're at? I think that's, you don't, yes, you can. Yes, you do. I think we have six that are all
great.
A yes, moving this forward. We have eight items on consent. If I don't see anybody pulling that off, I think we're all good to go. Thank you for staying late, and thank you, Channel 8, for allowing us to go a little bit over.
All right.
Appreciate it.